Okay. I thought as we get ready to go our ways, I would bring in a little bit about dreaming. And this is just straight from one of Joan's talks about practices of the night. But I thought if we talked a little bit about three different kinds of dreams, you might have fun just kind of noticing, you know, whether you have any of those, and that the observing a little bit the different feel of different kinds of dreams. So if our normal everyday, you know, perception awareness can be seen as the special case of dreaming constrained by sensory input. I just think that's such a cool idea.
Wow.
That actually, you know, what happens in the night is because we're not flooded with sensory input, our mind is not constrained, narrowed down. So that limited, yeah? So our consciousness is not overloaded in the night. It has space in which to breathe, so to speak. And so along with that, the night mind then is a very varied territory. Yeah, there can be lots of different kinds of things going on at different points in a night because the mind is free to move and it's quite active and always in transition from one kind of consciousness to another. So as we fall asleep, there's a quiet phase of restful inactivity, which is really restorative. And this is where sleep talking and sleepwalking happen. The first stage of that is hypnagogic, you know, where it's just sleep is starting to happen. That's that, you know, when you think you're stepping off a step and your leg, that's that hypnagogic state. And the moment when a koan breaks open can also kind of feel like that what just happened feeling. And then you go into light sleep for 20 or 30 minutes, and then delta sleep, deep sleep, for 30 to 40 minutes. And then it gets lighter a bit. And so about 70 to 90 minutes in, you'll go into, you know, REM, rapid eye movement sleep. Which is an active phase during which your brain burns as much fuel as it does when you're awake. That's a pretty active brain. In this part of the night, your dream will be just like 5 or 10 minutes. And then you'll awaken briefly and then go back into light sleep. And as the night goes on, the length of REM sleep increases. And so by If you sleep 8 hours, which is not a bad idea, which most of us don't do, then those last dreams will be like 45 minutes to an hour.
Really?
And they'll be closer together. But that doesn't get condensed if you only sleep 6 hours. You just lose that last round, or so. And a meditation practice does seem to shift those things around a little bit, but basically that's the way it is. And during a retreat, there's so much going on in the psyche that's sort of in those underneath layers, that's one reason actually that it does take, you need some recovery time, because sort of like dreaming, there is a tremendous amount of activity going on, but not of the usual sort.
Um,
And you need to be able to have time to integrate those cycles of active and quiet. And so that way, this sort of applies to what we were talking about earlier. The signal, we can notice better the signals that our mind sends out about when it's time to step out. Those can come from a deeper level that we can travel in more easily in meditation and dreaming. So it takes time to be able to pay attention to the signals that are coming from the deeper levels of our psyches that will tell us, is it time to step out? Is it time to act? Or not yet? Which is one of the lovely things about doing some of the practices of the night. So an example that Joan brings in from Lewis Hyde, that wonderful book, Gifts, some of you may know, that when we suffer gratitude, we really suffer gratitude. And it takes a while. We have to suffer it for a while before it really becomes integrated in us. So then to look at the Mahayana view of the three phases, there are three phases of the night. And in the first phase, you'll have karmic dreams. And those are the ones that are kind of the residue of the mental activity that was going on during the day and during the evening. You know, your brain keeps on doing what it was doing for a while. And those will be personal, and they can be diagnostic. You'll look at the dream and go, oh yeah, that means, oh yeah, you know, I know what that was about, that kind of dream. They tend to be kind of heavy and slow and thick. But to note, the material from a karmic dream may surface about a week later, apparently, with hints about how to transform whatever that karma was that you were working on. So you might kind of keep an eye out for that. You know, when you have one of those heavy karmic dreams, see whether a week or so later something pops up in a dream that seems to be addressing that same issue, but maybe with a suggestion or two, a hint about how to transform that karma. And these are generated by the self, right? These karmic dreams, this early. After midnight, the dreams begin, we begin to interpermeate with what else is out there. You know, things in the field. So we're, Joan says, more permeable to ghosts and coyotes. Things that go bump in the night. And so stuff can get more agitated and fiery in those dreams. And those are really a co-creation between the self and the autonomous processes of the universe. So they have that quality of something bigger is going on here, yeah, and I'm not sure what it is yet. And here there's an opportunity for a purification. So that's a little different than that sense of turning the karma that we get in those karmic dreams. But here there can be a kind of purification because we are co-creating with the bigger field. Then, in the third phase of the night, in the morning, come dreams of natural clarity. And those are that lightest kind of consciousness. And the self is no longer involved with these. We're open. The mind has become really permeable, open to influence from the larger field. They're given, not created by us. And they tend to be those ones that are strange. They can have advice or predictions in them, and I bet everybody here by now has had some of those where you go, oh my gosh, that was a true dream, in some way. And sometimes we can be dreaming, and it's good to remember that we can be dreaming for others. There may be something in that dream that we need to actualize for the benefit of others. The dream may be giving marching orders. We can receive teachings and initiations. And then she talks about receiving teachings and initiations from Dakini, from the mothers who walk in the sky. And those may be supportive or scary. You can get some pretty, you know, kick-ass instructions from the Dakini. And they can help us release the entanglements of the karmic dreams. And they will have, the karmic dreams will have symbols, right? This means that, oh yeah, this was standing for that. Sort of recognizable symbols. Although sometimes it'll take somebody else to recognize it, as you who are in a dream group know. But the dreams of clarity have signs which are a little different than symbols. Like an example is Moses' burning bush. You know, there was no question that was God in that burning bush. But that's not a symbol. It's like that's God there. That kind of a distinction between a sign and a symbol. And if you want to know about those signs, if you want help knowing what those signs are, a couple things you can do is to bring them into your meditation and ask, what is that? What is it? So that's one way to work with that kind of a dream. Or you can set an intention and ask for understanding the next night. In other words, ask for a dream about the dream. Ask for something that will clarify that sign. And with practice, with meditation, we get a little bit more able to release the entanglements of those karmic dreams and go straighter to dreams of natural clarity. So we can actually practice with our dreams in those ways. And that is all I have to say about that. Thank you, Joan.
Could you say something about the fact that Frank and Anne both dreamt about equipment, and in the Heart Sutra, three of us dreamt about driving?
Yeah.
What's that
bigger field happening. That is not so much your individual karma. That means that dream, it was partaking in the bigger field. And it certainly does happen when we are practicing together like this.
Okay.
Our dreams will start to talk to each other. We'll start to dream each other's dreams.
Hmm. Yeah.
It happens in a dream group too.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yep. They are bigger than us, fortunately. So it's time to stop. Any last thing, somebody? one sort of question I would like to suggest, since it came up with so much power among us today, is about helping. And it's kind of a question about that thing some of us have talked about before, about deeply not caring. When is compassion not dealing with the surface distress, but meeting the need at a deeper level? When is not helping a form of compassion, I guess I would say. Anybody else want to speak up?
Can't help them there.
The one thing,
yes.
Sorry, you asked. is that, you know, a lot of things are coming up for me personally, and the thing that really just seems to, I'll say it shine for me, is Hockman's instruction to turn the light inward.
Yeah.
And even though the things that come up, just like in our story, it appears to be outward. Turning the light inward is the great gift you can give yourself and others.
And I think that's what I see a lot of happening here, and will continue. Thank you. Yeah.
It's a reminder for myself.
Yeah, great. Yeah. You know, that phrase, actually, as I was reading the story, kept coming up for me. Because there was a lot about light and darkness in this. Yeah? When you turn the light inward, right, and witness your own nature. Okay, that's a great place to stop. Thank you, Frank.